Hello and welcome to the St Albans and District Talking Newspaper, primary edition for October 2019. The music played on this recording is called Amazing Things, and our thanks go to Gospel Music for allowing us to play it. The news items come from this week's edition of the Hearts Advertiser for week ending 5th of October. Here is my first news item. City traffic chaos. Major traffic disruption has affected the city centre due to the ongoing closure of a major thoroughfare. Catherine Street has been shut for 8 days in order for works to be carried out by Virgin Media, UK Power Network and Affinity Water. The work is expected to last until Monday, October the 7th, but could be delayed further by the recent inclement weather, and tailbacks have been seen in Verulam Road and elsewhere in the city as drivers seek alternative routes. A statement from Hertfordshire County Council about the work said, "The traffic management has been upgraded to a full road closure to facilitate additional works identified in Catherine Street, besides safeguarding the workforce and public alike. Collaborative working has been coordinated and agreed to avoid multiple closures at this location in the future. Some degree of disruption and delay can be expected because of these works, and whilst we will make every effort to minimise these, please allow extra time for any journeys you have planned in the area whilst these works are in progress." A shuttle bus is being provided between St Peter's Street and City Hospital, with bus operators running other services via alternative routes. The closure has caused chaos in surrounding roads. Frustrated residents have reported motorists swearing and shouting at each other, and drivers driving the wrong way down a one-way street where there are two nursery schools. Neighbour Claire Graham said, "Residents in the roads affected were not notified. It was horrendous yesterday, Tuesday, with very dangerous and illegal driving. You cannot get two vehicles abreast in Dalton Street, so you get stuck down there." St Albans resident Jay Acourt asked motorists on social media, "People live in Dalton Street, Grange Street, Bernard Street and Church Street, so if you could turn your bass sound system down and not repeatedly beep your horn, that would be nice of you." Local resident Candy Stewart said, "Carlisle Avenue is really struggling. Please try and be courteous. We're all in the same boat. It's frustrating for everyone, but it's only for a week."
Hello, I'm Lizanne. Here's my first item. Weather is no deterrent to festival fun. Despite torrential rain and driving winds, thousands of people packed out the city centre for the annual St Albans Festival. The six-hour street party, which was free to attend, offers a showcase for the district's food and drink industry. Among the attractions were around 90 stalls selling a wide range of takeaway food, craft beers, gins, honey, cheeses and other goods, with many from local producers. There was also a cookery theatre featuring demonstrations of culinary skills by the district's finest chefs, the Brooklyn Brewery bus and pop-up restaurants. Live music was provided by local musicians and there was plenty of children's activities, including a teddy bear's picnic area. The festival is a highlight of the 12th St Albans Food and Drink Festival, which runs until Sunday. This year, the festival took a step away from single-use plastics and encouraged businesses to use alternative containers made of recyclable material. Visitors were urged to dispose of their rubbish in the correct recycling bins that were positioned near stalls. Councillor Mandy McNeil, portfolio holder for Business, Culture and Tourism, said, "I was working with several fellow councillors, council officers and volunteers to man the recycling stations, and we were amazed at the size of the festival crowds that braved the weather. The new recycling stations were well received. Resident feedback was very favourable, and having manned recycling stations helped raise awareness of the need to step away from single-use plastic and where our waste goes. We had lots of children coming up to the bins and being very diligent in encouraging their parents to recycle. People were determined the rain wasn't going to dampen their spirits, and they all seemed to be having a great time, sampling the best that the district's food and drink industry has to offer." Among other festival highlights is Gin and Jazz, an evening of music as well as food and drink tastings in George Street on Friday. A vegan street market will be staged on St Peter Street on Sunday, bringing the festival to a close.
Hello, I'm Sue, and my first article is Luton Airport called on to reduce carbon emissions. Campaign groups in St Albans and Harpenden are calling on Luton Airport to reduce carbon emissions to help tackle the climate crisis. The Climate Change Committee, CCC, has said that growth in aviation emissions needs to be curbed in order to achieve net zero by 2050, with aviation likely to be the largest carbon-emitting sector in the UK by that time. Luton Airport is preparing to expand to accommodate 32 million passengers per year, but the CCC argues that without zero-carbon aircraft, demand cannot continue to grow unchecked over the long term. Andrew Lambourne of Luton and District Association for the Control of Aircraft Noise said Luton Airport needs to think carefully about a future strategy appropriate for a low-carbon world in which it has to take responsibility for emissions from the aircraft it flies, not just claim sustainability through reduction in the use of cars. The airport needs to show that it's being socially responsible as well as economically beneficial, which means cutting back on the noisy, polluting flights, scrapping plans to exceed its passenger limit, and focusing all its energies on achieving a genuine and sustainable reduction in emissions. St Albans MP Anne Main met with representatives from campaign group St Albans Quieter Skies to discuss the planned expansion and noise pollution caused by flights. Mrs Main has campaigned against aircraft noise pollution since the RNAV navigation system was introduced in 2015, narrowing the flight paths and concentrating noise over a smaller area. She said, "Residents are rightly annoyed by the continuing inaction from Luton Airport and the CAA. We were meant to have a full review of the RNAV route months ago, and still we have nothing. On top of that, Luton Airport and the council are making headway with their plans for expansion, which is not acceptable for residents whose lives are being heavily impacted by noise." Mrs. Main also argued that a drop in noise complaints is not an indication of the problem improving, as residents will become discouraged from complaining if nothing seems to change. St Albans Quieter Skies spokesman John Hale echoed the call for carbon emissions to be reduced. He said, "The CCC has made clear that measures should be put in place to limit growth in aviation demand to at most 25% above current levels by 2050. These could include carbon pricing, a frequent flyer levy, fiscal measures to ensure aviation is not undertaxed compared to other transport sectors, reforms to air passenger duty, or management of airport capacity. As more people realise that aviation emissions have double the impact of other sources due to high altitude gases and vapour trails, these measures will reinforce a need to think about flying more responsibly or even not at all." St Albans Liberal Democrat parliamentary candidate Daisy Cooper agreed with the campaigners, saying there must be no further growth in capacity of Luton Airport on both environmental and economic grounds. With aviation forecast to be the largest contributor of greenhouse gases by 2050, Liberal Democrats are committed to halting the development of all new runways in the UK and to requiring all domestic flights to blend traditional fuels with zero carbon fuels to reduce emissions. Luton Borough Council has made a public commitment to moving the town to zero carbon emissions before the government's target of 2050, with a cross-party working group established to have meaningful targets and actions in place by January 2020. Councillor Andy Malcolm, portfolio holder for finance and chair of LLAL, London Luton Airport Limited, said the council's approach to tackling climate change and LLAL's proposals for airport expansion are driven by the highest standards of public interest, and we will continue to take account of government guidance on how to deal with aviation-related activity. LLAL has developed a new sustainability strategy and invested in an air quality monitoring regime, and and wants to make the best use of the airport's single runway for the economic and employment benefits that the airport brings to the town. A second public consultation on expansion proposals is set to take place this autumn.
Hello, I'm Bill Lawley-York, and my first article is about the disturbance caused by aircraft noise. Some St Albans residents believe that Heathrow Airport flights are causing greater noise disturbance over the district than flights to and from Luton Airport. Multiple campaign groups have formed in response to an increase in noise pollution from Luton over the past 3 years. But other residents in southeast St Albans believe Heathrow is the greater cause of the problem. Resident Lawrence McCann said, "Don't assume the issue comes from Luton Airport. Our experience in southeast St Albans is that most disturbance is coming from flights which have taken off from Heathrow. At busy times, one can expect typically 13 per hour and peaking at 1 every 3 minutes. Given the plans to increase Heathrow capacity by adding another runway, it appears the issue will get worse. Residents should raise their concerns with local and national authorities to raise awareness of the creeping disruption across a very wide area caused by continuing to expand the existing Heathrow site to its extreme limits. All UK airports, including Heathrow, are currently redesigning their airspace as part of a modernisation programme which is being overseen by the Civil Aviation Authority. Heathrow's first airspace consultation took place in the first quarter of 2018. The second was in the fourth quarter of 2019, and the third and final consultation will be held in 2022 and will outline specific flight paths for the airport. A Heathrow spokesperson said, "These consultations have helped us outline a set of design principles and envelopes that will be used in our third consultation to help determine future flight paths for the airport, including those for an expanded Heathrow. While detailed flight paths are not yet available, our work so far shows that if future aircraft were to fly above St Albans, they would be flying in excess of 4,000 feet as they are today." The airport states they are working closely with local community and the government to ensure they deliver expansion within legally required environmental targets, which includes noise pollution. As part of their plans, they aim to offer guaranteed periods of respite and a 6.5-hour ban on scheduled night flights to reduce noise.
Trust receives share of £2.7 billion cash pot for hospital projects. A government funding boost has been given to West Hertfordshire Hospital's NHS Trust, WHHT, to renovate buildings and improve mental health care. WHHT is one of six hospital trusts in the UK to benefit from a £2.7 billion funding investment from the government, which is intended to fund hospital projects over the next 5 years. WHHT Chief Executive Christine Allen said, "We are delighted that the need for significant funding has been met with an investment plan for our buildings and facilities. Our staff have been working incredibly hard over recent years to raise our standards of care, but over this time our estate has continued to decline. While there have been pockets of investment, our current estate takes time and money to keep safe. Our improvement programme has done much for patient care and staff morale, but it can feel like an uphill struggle when we're challenged by the many issues that come from having ageing buildings and facilities. There have been numerous plans over years to transform our estate, but these have never been awarded the funding to proceed. Our patients and staff can now look forward to receiving and providing care in modern surrounds. We're working closely with regulators and our colleagues in the CCG, Heart Valley's Clinical Commissioning Group, and we'll share our proposals as soon as possible. The Trust is unable to confirm the amount of funding allocated to West Hearts until discussions with NHS regulators have been finalised. The government also invested £70 million in a national fund for community mental health services, which has been allocated by NHS England to just 12 areas across the UK. Hertfordshire and West Essex Sustainability and Transformation Partnership, STP, was chosen to receive a £4.5 million funding boost to improve speciality support for people with moderate to severe mental health illnesses. Helping people with mental health issues in the local community can put a strain on GP practices, which are often the main source of support for people with mild or moderate needs. However, people who need more specialist support from dedicated mental health services can find it difficult to get the help they need when they need it. Community mental health teams, which work with people living in their own homes, are designed to bridge the gap between GP and specialist hospital care. Dr. Geraldine O'Sullivan, consultant psychiatrist and the STP's clinical lead for mental health, said, "We will use the funding to test new ways of caring with service users. GPs, local authorities, the voluntary sector, families and carers, and local communities working together. The new approaches we use will ultimately help set the standard for patients across the country who need access to better community mental health treatments." The NHS Long-Term Plan, published in January this year, placed a great emphasis on the need to transform community mental health services, and Dr. O'Sullivan thanked the strength of local partnerships for making the funding possible. The funding will focus on improving the ways in which adults with complex mental health difficulties who've been diagnosed with a personality disorder are treated, improving services for patients with eating disorders, and testing new ways of supporting 18 to 25-year-olds with mental health problems and meeting the needs of different communities. WHHT and CCG have already been given a £350 million budget to renovate services at Watford General, St Albans City and Hemel Hempstead hospitals, with the bulk of the money to be spent on Watford General. The Trust was also recently named the Best UK Employer by the Nursing Times for its progress over the past few years in improving working life for its staff after coming out of special measures in 2017. This includes a nurse recruitment campaign, reduced use of agency staff, and numerous initiatives to raise morale and engagement. Chief Nurse Tracy Carter said, "Nursing is a wonderful profession, but it can be really hard work. We want our nurses and all our staff to enjoy their jobs and build their careers with us, and that's why we've put in so much support for them."
Surgery opens garden project to help patients. A new community-led initiative aimed at helping people with mental health concerns has led to the opening of a therapy garden. Parkbury House Surgery has opened the garden at its practice in Hopkins Crescent, Sandridge, as part of their social prescribing facility. Social prescribing is a process aimed at helping people who have low moods, mild depression, anxiety, or long-term mental health conditions, or who are physically inactive. As part of the scheme, a GP or primary healthcare professional makes a referral to a social prescriber based in the surgery, and the patient is then supported to engage in community-based activities. The first step in the creation of the therapy garden involved 9 members of the practice planting bulbs. In the future, they will include a peaceful area, a vegetable plot with raised beds, and a wildflower area. The surgery has been supported by a small grant from Sandridge Parish Council. Paul McNally, head of social prescribing at Parkbury House Surgery, said, "We believe the garden will help individuals with any experience of mental ill health to develop social connections that can support transition out of hospital. Working together on a common goal reduces barriers towards mental health care and can lessen anxieties. It will also encourage prolonged engagement with a support service outside of secondary care and promote vocational skill development, purpose, sense of worth, responsibility, and increasing social skills for individuals." The initiative has won the support of the It's Okay to Say campaign, which was launched by anxiety specialist Stacey Turner alongside the Hearts advertiser last year, and encourages people to speak out about mental health concerns before they escalate. Stacey said, "This is such a lovely concept. It makes a wonderful addition to being able to offer more than a referral and help patients feel reassured while they're perhaps waiting for further help. It's not just a garden, it's therapy and extended help. One patient said, "Your social prescribing is an exceptional service. It's invaluable. It's so nice to have someone to listen and understand. As you get older, when things go wrong, it can be very frightening. Your help really saved me."
This is from the Your Opinions column. Business Improvement District, or BID, launches Shop St Albans. It's no secret that high streets across the UK have struggled over recent years to compete with the growth of online shopping. In the first half of this year alone, nearly 3,000 shops on UK high streets have closed down. St Albans bricks and mortar retailers are no exception. While we have an impressive mix of independent shops and top quality high street names in the city's retail offering, the unlevel playing field with the online world makes it an increasingly tough market in which to compete. With Christmas around the corner, our city centre businesses, via the BID, are working harder than ever to ensure that footfall to our city centre shops increases in the run-up to Christmas with the launch of a Shop St Albans campaign. The growth of online shopping has shown that we can no longer rely on Christmas being a time of organic sales growth, and we as a board are determined to make this new campaign a success to ensure that footfall to the city centre increases and our hard-working retailers will reap the rewards with increased spend. The initiative will highlight the unique quality shopping experience in the city and encourage everyone to support their local retailers this festive season. It will provide shoppers with real-time, valuable information about offers, products and services on their doorstep, while giving retailers extra publicity for their businesses. The new campaign, being led by marketing manager Sarah Fenton, will include print and online promotions, and local radio and busside advertising, which will be underpinned by an extensive social media campaign of curated content and blogs about our valued businesses. The campaign also incorporates the St Albans gift card, which is a MasterCard-based gift card that works in the same way as department store or shopping centre gift cards. It is accepted in a wide variety of city centre retailers, including Lush, and can also be used in restaurants, bars, pubs and hair and beauty salons. Vanessa Sharp, Business Liaison Manager for the BID, says that accommodation providers, including the White Hart Hotel, also accept the card, along with attractions such as the St Albans Museum and Gallery and the Cathedral. Keith Newlin, owner of Kings Hill Jewellery and a BID director, says the gift card makes the perfect Christmas present, as while it can be used in many shops, it can also be used to buy a meal, get a haircut, or buy a coffee. But the most important aspect is that you are supporting your local businesses. It's the perfect alternative to shopping online, as you get the feel-good factor of supporting many of our independent shops too. We as a board are hopeful that with all of the offers from our retailers that will come through the Shop St Albans campaign and the popularity of our St Albans gift card, our high street will be more appealing than ever before and our hard-working retailers will have a bumper festive season.
Knights and Damsels Party Like It's 1399, a medieval festival. The Medieval Days Festival took place over 3 days in St Michael's Church and Kingsbury Barn, with medieval music, food, storytelling and martial arts. The festival programme also included Harry Christophers from Choirs the 16, which has performed at St Albans Cathedral, who was interviewed by BBC presenter Sarah Moore-Peach at the church. St Michael's resident Jill Singers, a doctor in Anglo-Saxon, gave a talk explaining that there was actually more light and better food in the alleged Dark Ages than is usually supposed. She put forward the idea that the arrival of the Saxons was not so much violent and invasive, but more like modern immigration, bringing skills, sharing ideas, and providing labour where the land needed it. Meister Terry Brown demonstrated the English martial arts used by both men and women to protect themselves in a pre-police age, showing that a well-trained man with a pole was equal to a well-armoured knight on a horse. Medieval cookery expert Bridget Webster explained how good medieval food could be, including slow-cooked meats and well-spiced sweetmeats, and Terry English, Britain's foremost armour maker for films and television, told how he researches armour and makes sure it allows for freedom of movement. The Hearts early English dance group taught medieval dance, and fantasy art expert Chris Achilios demonstrated the long-lasting power of a well-drawn dragon. Musicians Led Troubadour, more commonly known as Chuck and Angie Silverman, also played dulcimer and recorder with their backing band, the Broadswords. Sue McMillan and Hannah McDowell performed stories from the mythology of King Arthur and Merlin, including the tale of Sir Gawain and the Green Knight. Festival producer Evan Todd said, "All was evoked brilliantly in the mind's eye, merely through gesture and tone. These are the tales that Britain still tells, and it was a beguiling evening, reconnecting us with the storytelling skills that lasted 30,000 years before the coming of moving images on a screen. It was a remarkable performance."
Planned care centre is mooted for West Harts. NHS bosses will consider a new planned care centre in addition to renovating existing hospital services in West Harts if additional funds are available. In their strategic outline case, West Harts Hospitals NHS Trust, WHHT, and Harts Valley's Clinical Commission Group, HVCCG, submitted their preferred option for renovating hospital sites known as Option 1. This would involve using the bulk of the £350 million budget to renovate services at Watford General Hospital, with the remainder spent on renovations at St Albans City and Hemel Hempstead. Following their submission, NHS England and NHS Improvement asked that the Trust and the CCG to consider the suitability of a hybrid of Option 1 and Option 4, which involved building a new planned care centre. A joint statement from WHHT and HVCCG said, "We discussed this, and the Trust has been working on producing an outline in the full knowledge that any provisional suggestions that might be taken forward would be subject to an entirely new process of engagement and decision-making. If we're advised that more capital is available, the CCG and the Trust will respond appropriately to any further information or guidance, and in doing so, we would launch a further process to consider options." Local campaign groups, such as the New Hospital Campaign, have long argued that a new hospital central to St Albans, Watford and Tacorum would best suit the needs of a growing population. Campaigner Andy Love said, "Affordability was the main argument used by the local health authorities to dismiss the new build A&E hospital at such an early stage. So any additional funding should bring the option back to the table for a full and fair evaluation. In my opinion, option 4 would not be the best outcome for St Albans residents, given that the current St Albans City Hospital would probably be sacrificed for a new planned care centre between Hemel and St Albans. A new and more central West Harts A&E hospital should reduce the need for St Albans residents to be passed between the three current hospitals for different tests and consultations and treatments."
A St Albans leisure centre has been shortlisted for an industry award. Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre is in the running for Local Authority Gym of the Year in the National Fitness Awards for 2019. This award recognises facilities that are at the heart of the community and offer a wide range of services for all members. The centre is operated by Everyone Active in partnership with St Albans City and District Council. Portfolio holder for Sport and Culture at the District Council, Councillor Anthony Rowlands said, "We are very proud of the diverse offering for local people of all ages and abilities. It is a leisure centre of the highest quality with a wide range of attractions." Everyone Active General Manager Leslie Garner added, "I'm so pleased to reach the final stage of this awards category, which we know is hotly contested and highly competitive. Westminster Lodge will be visited by one of the judges next month and the winners will be announced at a ceremony on the 29th of November.
2020 Polar Bear Plunge launches with a huge splash. St Albans' famous Polar Bear Plunge, where hardy locals take a dip in the icy waters of the Sub Aquas Club outdoor pool, is set to return in 2020. The event has been held each New Year's Day at the pool in Cotton Mill Lane since 2016 and has raised £25,000 for good causes. The Polar Bear Plunge sees people aged 6 and up, including families, workmates and sports teams, many in fancy dress, brace the cold to raise cash for local charities. These include organiser Earthworks, which teaches horticulture to people with learning disabilities in their 3 acres of eco gardens in St Albans, and guest charity Small Acts of Kindness, which was founded in 2014 by Lynn Misner to tackle loneliness amongst older people in winter months. Local businessman and Polar Bear Plunge Master of Ceremonies Neil Barra-Smith said, "It's the perfect way to blow off the cobwebs and start the new year. The water will take your breath away, but within a few minutes of getting out of the water, you have a warm glow about you and a real sense of achievement." Previous organiser Claire Sutty, who founded the event with husband Ed, added, "After working with Earthworks St Albans every year since the very first Polar Bear Plunge 4 years ago, it seemed only fitting that Ed and I would pass the plunge on to Earthworks. I know it will be in safe hands. It is fantastic that this fun family event, embraced by the community of St Albans, will continue, and I hope will do so for years to come. It's such a fun way to raise much-needed funds for local charities. Participants will be rewarded with free hot chocolate and marshmallows, a hot shower and a hat, and loud spectators to cheer them on, with music, cake and a bar to make it a perfect New Year's Day." This year's Polar Bear Plunge was launched by the Mayor of St Albans, Councillor Janet Smith, and Earthworkers Ed and Zunira. Tickets are on sale now. Adults £18, children £5. Book before November the 30th to get your early bear ticket for just £12.
School Anniversary News. Maple Primary School celebrates its golden anniversary this year, and the whole school kicked off the celebrations with a birthday party. All the children had a go at a variety of traditional games, past and present, ranging from marbles, jacks, quoits, tiddlywinks, clapping games and cat's cradle, to space hopper races, parachute games, what's the time, Mr. Wolf, ladders and group skipping. During the afternoon, every child planted a special golden daffodil bulb to commemorate the 50th year. There was a display of maypole dancing, an enthusiastic rendition of Happy Birthday, and the cutting of a special 50th birthday cake. Head teacher Tim Bowen said, "The afternoon birthday celebration commemorating our school's 50th year was a wonderful occasion for all the pupils and staff. I'm sure that the very special event will be remembered by the pupils for many years to come. For me, personally, it was definitely one of the highlights of my 19 years as head teacher. The school would love to hear from anyone who has been associated with the school since it opened in 1969. And there's a charming, I think, photograph of the children in the playground, sunlit, dancing the maypole.
St Albans writers will be showcasing their talent as part of Libraries Week. The Local Writers Showcase is part of Libraries Week 2019 to give writers an opportunity to read their work to the public in the newly refurbished St Albans Library. The free event, run by Verulam Writers, will be at 7 p.m. on October the 12th. The audience will hear selections of literature read out by the authors and have the opportunity to chat with them over refreshments. The lineup of writers includes Vellum Writers members and non-members, published and unpublished authors of fiction, non-fiction and poetry, with work ranging from crime to comedy, sci-fi to satire, fact to fantasy. Vellum Writers Group is now in its 66th year. Meeting at St Michael's Church Hall every second Wednesday, the group is open to all writers, with beginners particularly welcome.
A St Albans church is celebrating harvest with flowers. St Leonard's Church in Sandridge is holding a flower festival beginning on Friday, October the 4th at 11 a.m. and running until Sunday, October the 6th. The theme this year is Saints and Heroes, and St Alban and Amphibolus will be remembered. Local heroes such as Jim Joel of Childwickbury Stud and the Duchess of Bedford, as well as lifeboat personnel, the medical and nursing professions, and favourite fictional figures will also be celebrated. Community choir Village Voices will sing on Saturday, October the 5th at 8 p.m, and tickets are £5 at the door. Entry to the Flower Festival is free, and tea, coffee and homemade cakes will be available throughout. There will be an all-age harvest celebration at 10 a.m. on Sunday.
Extinction Rebellion flags. Climate change activists in St Albans have been working through the night to create protest flags for national demonstrations. Members of Extinction Rebellion St Albans have created 80 flags with its distinctive hourglass logo to be used for the group's international rebellion in London from October the 7th. This is a series of protests designed to disrupt the capital and push the government to take climate change seriously. Extinction Rebellion flag maker Caro said, "We make a makeshift printing press out of old cardboard and newspapers. It took a while to get the process running efficiently, but we soon got very quick at it." Another activist, Claire, said, "If you see drip marks on them, they're the ones that got caught in the dew when we were working overnight." The 80 St Albans flags will add to about 4,000 made around the UK.
A festival of sport. Almost 1,000 people took part in various events as the St Albans Festival of Sport was hailed a resounding success. Held around Westminster Lodge and Verulamium Park, athletes of all ages competed in triathlons, duathlons, aquathlons, with children getting involved with a scootathon. Mother and daughter triathlon competitors Elizabeth and Emmy Grover said it was a well-organised, fun event with lots of different people taking part. Triathlon is for everybody, not just the elite. Leslie Garner, General Manager at Westminster Lodge Leisure Centre, said, "We're pleased that the Festival of Sport continues to support and encourage participation in sport in St Albans and across Hertfordshire." Gifty Enright, Director of Organisers Hercules Events, added, "Residents came out to watch elite and amateur athletes and to cheer on family and friends. We were particularly delighted that so many children took part."
Welcome to another week of suggestions for varied listening. We begin with those programmes serialised throughout the week from Monday to Friday. The book of the week on Radio 4 and repeated at 12:30 a.m. is The Body by Bill Bryson, in which the mysteries of the human body are explored. The 15-minute drama at 10:45 a.m. on Radio 4 and repeated at 7:45 p.m. is The Return of the Citadel by A.J. Cronin, in which a young doctor encounters corruption and bad medical practices in a Welsh mining village during the interwar years. The composer of the week on Radio 3 at noon is Sergei Prokofiev. The 12:04 PM book on Radio 4, repeated at 10:45 PM, is The Confession by Jessie Burton, in which a woman goes in search of the truth about her mother's disappearance. 1:45 PM on Radio 4 sees the continuation of The Art of Innovation. Each evening at 8 PM on Classic FM, you can hear the Full Works Concert, in which a varied programme of popular classics are played in their entirety. Now, here are my picks of individual programmes from Saturday afternoon to Friday evening. Saturday, 2:15 drama on Radio 4 is Passion Play by Peter Nichols, who died last month, aged 92. This play from 1981 is a comic and moving study of love, infatuation and marriage. Pam Ayers celebrates her life and career in The Radio Years at 7 PM on Radio 4 Extra. A contrasting choice of music can be heard at 9 PM. On Radio 2, Brad Paisley hosts This Is Country Music, while on Classic FM, Debbie Wiseman introduces Sounds and Sweet Airs, a celebration of women in music across the centuries. Sunday, at 3 PM on Radio 4, there is the first of two parts of Michael Frayn's adaptation of Chekhov's Platonov, renamed Wild Honey, and starring David Tennant. Roger McGough introduces the 40th anniversary series of Poetry Please at 4:30 PM on Radio 4. Words and Music on Radio 3 at 5:30 PM has the subject of windows, literal and metaphorical, as its theme. Still with Radio 3, Florian Zeller's 2010 play The Mother, with Gina McKee in the title role and music by Philip Glass, is at 7:30 PM. A very interesting programme worth staying up for is on at 11:30 PM on Radio 4. Hearing Homelessness with Hugh Huddy, who lost his sight in his 20s, uses binaural sound to capture the sound world as heard by the homeless living on the streets.
Monday. A good way to start the week at 9 AM on Radio 4 is to hear Lenny Henry chatting to Kirsty Walk about his early life, plus contributions on the subject of being an outsider from novelist Tessa McWatt and sports writer Matthew Syed. A shortened version is at 9:30 PM. David Cannadine's On Crossing the Religious Divide is at 11:30 AM on Radio 4. The eminent historian suggests that people's lives and nations are not divided by religion in the ways that history might imply. The musical quiz Counterpoint is always entertaining and so satisfying when you know at least some of the answers. This is at 3 PM on Radio 4. The current vogue for decluttering our lives is reflected in Shapiko Sandy Gets Organised at 8 PM on Radio 4 and repeated on Wednesday at 11 AM. Despite advice from professional declutterers, the comedian finds that she is more worried by her emotional baggage than by her physical baggage. Tuesday. It's easy for some of us to dismiss a science programme as boring, but this is rarely true when it is in the hands of Jim Al-Khalili and his programme, The Life Scientific, at 9 AM on Radio 4. This week, his guest, Professor Anne McGurran, an ecologist, investigates biological diversity and likens what is happening in nature to what is happening to our high streets. The secret world of diplomacy is explored by the BBC's diplomatic correspondent at 11 AM on Radio 4. In Leaks, Tweets and Modern Diplomacy, he discovers the skills and abilities today's diplomats need to survive. A Question of Judgment is the 2:15 PM drama on Radio 4. A retired judge, played by Timothy West, is to chair a public inquiry into a gas explosion on a council estate. More drama, this time at 3 PM on Radio 4 Extra, with a dramatisation of Wilkie Collins' 1862 novel No Name. 3:30 PM on Radio 4 is the time to hear Costing the Earth, when Tom Heap reports from the Orkney Islands on how they are pioneering a zero-carbon approach to energy, which might help the rest of the UK in the quest towards clean energy. Time for some humour, with Claire in the Community at 6:30 p.m. on Radio 4. This is the final series about the hopeless social worker. A concert to celebrate the 300th anniversary of W.A. Mozart's father, Leopold, is at 7:30 p.m. on Radio 3. It features the English Cornet and Sackbut Ensemble. Jamie Callum's jazz show provides a contrast at 9 p.m. on Radio 2.
For Wednesday, the versatile Rowan Atkinson stars as three different vicars in a spoof documentary, God's Work, at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4. The afternoon concert on Radio 3 at 2 p.m. has Bernard Haitink conducting Beethoven's Great Symphony No. 9, The Choral. The latest series of Brief Lives continues at 2:15 p.m. on Radio 4, when the team of legal advisers help the people of Manchester who have had a run-in with the law. A varied evening's listening can be had on Radio 4 Extra, starting at 6:30 p.m. with Dudley Sutton's That Reminds Me, then at 7 p.m. Hancock's Half Hour, followed at 7:30 p.m. by Listen to Les, with Les Dawson. And then, at 8 p.m, Sherlock Holmes with Carlton Hobbs in The Adventure of the Three Garidebs. Radio 2 at 9 p.m. is the place for Mark Radcliffe's folk show.
On Thursday, from our own correspondent, Radio 4 at 11 a.m. is always full of interest. Tales from the Stave returns for a new series at 11:30 a.m. on Radio 4. This week, Clemency Burton examines the creative process behind Max Brooks' Violin Concerto No. 1. A comedy, The Lambeth Waltz, is the 2:15 p.m. drama on Radio 4 based on the claims of psychic and composer Marion Bailey's claim, great composers dictate music to her from the grave. Radio 4 Extra once again offers an evening of contrast, starting at 6:30 p.m. with Great Lives, when Connie Hugg considers the life of Ada Lovelace, Byron's daughter, who wrote the first computer program. At 7 p.m, the legal comedy Brothers-in-Law, and at 7:30, I'm sorry, I'll read that again. Another Sherlock Holmes mystery is at 8 p.m. The Carlton Hobbs is once again the great detective in The Norwood Builder. Bob Harris once again hosts The Country Show at 9 p.m. on Radio 2. On Friday, in The Corrections at 11 a.m. on Radio 4, news stories are revisited to discover the truth, or not, of the headlines. This week, The Carbonara Affair. In 2017, The Times published a story about a Christian child supposedly forced to live with a Muslim family. Was this accurate? The drama at 2:15 on Radio 4 is Elsinore, a prequel to Hamlet, set in an alternative 1930s Europe. A tea time double can be heard from 4 p.m. on Radio 4, starting with Last Word, a celebration of notable people who have recently died, followed at 4:30 p.m. by Feedback with Roger Bolton, who puts listeners' views on BBC Radio to the programme makers. Pop and Soul Odies are on offer in Tony Blackburn's Golden Hour at 7 p.m. on Radio 2. Friday night is Music Night on Radio 2 at 8 p.m. Centres on the music of Queen, recorded at the London Palladium in February. I hope some of these programmes will be of interest and give pleasure.
again and welcome to part two. Today, we start part two with a recording of the speeches that were made at last week's Queen's Awards ceremony, which was held at St Michael's Manor.
On Monday, the 23rd of September 2019, over 100 listeners, volunteers and friends of St Albans and District Talking Newspaper gathered at St Michael's Manor on Fishbourne Street in St Albans. The reason was to participate in a rather special event, the presentation by the Lord Lieutenant of Hertfordshire of the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service, which, as he explained, is in fact the group equivalent of an MBE. Now, this award to our Talking Newspaper, which is now in its 45th year, was officially announced on the Queen's birthday on June the 2nd, 2019. And so that all listeners could participate in this presentation, even if not all could make it to the event, we recorded the opening welcome by me, your chairman, and the presentation speech by Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of the County of Hertfordshire, Robert Voss, CBE.
Standing for the Lord Lieutenant. Thank you very much. Could you, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you very much. Please be seated. Thank you very much. We're recording this, what he said here, so that it can go into a future programme for those listeners who are not able to be here today. So I'm hoping that this is working. If it's not, I'll do it all again. I'm going to keep my opening comments very brief, which is unlike me, I know. But I do have an unfortunate announcement, if that's the right word, to say first, because it would be wrong not to mention the fact. I think all our volunteers are aware, but not our listeners, that one of our long-standing volunteers, our studio manager, Danny Onn, died last week. Now, he would be the last one who would want this mood to change as a result of that. But I think it would be equally wrong of me not to make that knowledge commonly known. And the details of the funeral, Danny Onn's funeral, will be available soon. I believe we've already got them, and they will be coming around to all the listeners and volunteers very soon. For those who wish to remember Danny, who did about 15 years as studio manager, so he was a long-standing member of the team. Now, I have to introduce all of our guests that I've not known, and everybody here is, of course, a guest, and I will introduce everybody, but not all by name. First is Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of the County of Hertfordshire, Robert Voss, CBE, who will shortly be making the presentation of the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service. We have with us today also three Deputy Lieutenants. I can see Deputy Lieutenant Penny Williams. Those of you who are involved in the process of being grilled for this award will know that she was heavily involved. She was constantly asking more and more questions, as was Michael Findlay-Baker. Now, I cannot see where he is. Thank you. Who is over here? Both of them were the team that grilled and investigated us, and 15 of us in the last final meeting had to answer all sorts of questions before we got this far. Also here, Akhtar Zaman, who anybody who was at the AGM will know Akhtar. Anybody who's listened to the series on three religions will know that Akhtar Zaman is not only deputy Lieutenant of the County of Hertford, but also President of the Islamic Centre in St Albans. We're also delighted to welcome, said he, desperately looking to see where, the right worshipful Mayor of the City and District of St Albans. Thank you very much for coming. Also the Town Mayor of Harpenden, Councillor Brian Ellis, and three former right worshipful Mayors of the City and District of St Albans. Councillor Annie Brewster, I can't see it, she's over there. She was our guest at the 40th anniversary, and she managed to cut the cake before Mike Tetley's guide dog started to eat it. So you're right. Councillor Francis Leonard, who is here, and was a guest at our AGM in 2017. Councillor Rosemary Farmer, who has come to more AGMs than any other councillor that I know, but she keeps being mayor of this, that and the other. But she also gave us the award, which is here, the Mayor's Pride Award 2019, which was a great honour to receive from her earlier this year. And finally, Councillor Jackie Taylor. I've lost her. Thank you. Over in the corner. Who is a Cabinet Member for Housing, Inclusion and Community Protection at St Albans and District Council. Now, I believe that some of those words are relevant to what we try to do as an organisation. In other words, the inclusion is our key word, if you like. We try to include our listeners in what happens in the world. All the other guests, of course, are either volunteers or listeners or friends and of either of those two things. I do want to just mention a few, because 45 years is what we're celebrating with this award. The award is rather more important, obviously. It's a great honour. But there have been some volunteers who've been here for quite a lot of that time. Peter Burley, he's been around for about 43 or 44 years. I find that hard to believe, because he must have been a child when he started. Linda Randall is now our vice president. She's been around with us for 33 years, I believe. Dawn Wheeler, somewhere here, has fulfilled just about every role that I can think of, including when I arrived, she was the secretary. She's been around for about 20 years, as has Robin Cristoforu, who everybody knows because he's been producing programmes for many years, and he's currently our treasurer. Some of these people have done lots and lots of different jobs within the organisation. And Fiona Ashley, another one, around about 20 years. So those are long periods of time, up to 45. Only Peter can claim to have done almost all of them. I want to mention one other who's here today, because I don't know her, and I don't know whether she is here. Mrs. Margaret Redding. Is she here?
Yes.
Great. Her husband, Bob, was one of the earlier stalwarts and I believe chairman. And I'm sorry, I didn't meet him, so I don't know what other jobs he did, but I suspect it was many. So we're delighted to see you here today. So it now gives me great pleasure, and I'm sure it gives everybody else great pleasure, to hand over to the Lord Lieutenant.
Well, thank you very much indeed, and my goodness, what a fantastic gathering. I remember when I got a phone call and I was asked if I would like to be interviewed by Rob in his studio, and I recall very clearly being very excited. I thought I was going to this fabulous studio. I thought, this is going to be marvellous, and there'll be technicians there and people fiddling with knobs. And eventually I found the cafe and sort of wandered up these crickety old stairs, and there was Rob sitting behind a desk, and we just about managed to get both of us in the room at once. And he interviewed me, and we had a good chat, and then he started to explain all about the talking newspaper. And I have to say, I was absolutely enthralled. And the work that you do to bring such pleasure and information to people in the community who otherwise would not be able to glean that information, I think is absolutely fantastic. 45 years is a very poignant number for me, because as my children and my wife keep reminding me, that is my next wedding anniversary. So 45 years is very poignant, and I know exactly what I was doing 45 years ago. I was getting married. The award that I will give, which is the Queen's Award for Voluntary Service, is really something extremely special. It is known, as you probably are aware, as the MBE for Volunteers. And it is something that is particularly special. I think there are only about 200 awarded each year throughout the whole of the United Kingdom. Hertfordshire, I'm delighted to say, this year, and Penny will correct me if I'm wrong, has won 5 awards, and we are extremely proud. We estimate, and it is an estimate, that we have about 150,000 regular volunteers in Hertfordshire. I'll say that again. There's 150,000 people who are regularly volunteering, which is about 14% of the county's population. And when I understand that the national average is about 8%, you can see how very, very generous the people of Hertfordshire are with their time. And the people I see before me and who are going to receive this award are really exemplifying that wonderful figure of volunteering, which is so important throughout the county in getting the message and help out to so many vulnerable and disadvantaged people. So it's a huge honour, and not one ever to be underestimated. Before I actually present it, the chairman has given me a couple of notes. And as he said, it's been difficult to determine exactly how long some people have been serving for. Serving, that's the wrong word, isn't it? Volunteering for. And in recognition, and he says here, that the award is made really to all those volunteers over the last 45 years, from the founding members to the most recent. But I've been asked to invite the following long service volunteers, all of whom who served for at least 20 years or more, if they would mind coming forward. So, Peter Burley, Linda Randall, Dawn Wheeler, Robin Christoph Farou, and Fiona Ashley. And what I will do is present this very heavy and rather beautiful award to whoever is not going to drop it. You will have a good look at it later, but it says here, the Queen's Award Voluntary Service 2019. To whom shall I have the honour of presenting it on everybody's behalf?
Linda.
Peter.
Pass it round.
Well, pass it round with great care, but...
You notice I move my feet out of the way in case
So, many, many congratulations.
Thank you very much.
What I would also like to do is read out this rather wonderful certificate signed by Her Majesty the Queen, and I will read it out verbatim. Elizabeth II, by the grace of God of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, and our other realms and territories, Queen, Defender of the Faith, to St. Albans and District Talking Newspaper, keeping visually impaired listeners in touch with the local community through weekly audio programmes, greetings. We, being cognizant of the said group's outstanding voluntary work in the community, and being desirous of showing our royal favour, do hereby confer upon it the Queen's Golden Jubilee Award for Voluntary Service by Groups in the Community 2019. For such period as the group continues to provide its current service, and do hereby give permission for the authorised emblem of the said award to be displayed on the group's letterhead and other public material. Given at our Court of St. James, under our Royal Sign Manual, this second day of June 2019, and this is the part I love most of all, in the 68th year of our reign. And it is signed by Her Majesty. So I'll give this to Peter, shall I?
I'd like to thank you very much, Her Majesty's Lord Lieutenant of the County of Hertfordshire. I think I've got all the titles right, almost all. Thank you very much indeed. We appreciate your presence and your time. You have a busy year every year for the next nine to go. Thank you very much.
My pleasure.
Come through.
Thank you very much.
Once the official ceremony was complete, everyone enjoyed afternoon tea, sandwiches, scones and cakes, and we all rather enjoyed it. And we're grateful to Mark Harrison for ensuring that we were able to get a record of this event so that everyone can hear it.
This is Rupert Evershed reading my monthly nature notes for the Hearts Advertiser. Look out for the little brown birds of autumn. One of the great delights of late summer, at least when the weather is good, is sitting in the garden watching the natural world go by. And go by it does at this time of year, as swallows and martins return south high overhead for the winter. The swifts have already gone, and a multitude of smaller passerines feed their way through treetops and bushes, here today, gone tomorrow. Though it would seem handy and apt at this time of year for passerine to mean passing bird, the word is actually derived from the Latin for sparrow, passer, and refers to more than half of all bird species. Technically, the scientific order Passeriformes include all perching birds, defined as those with three toes pointing forward and one pointing back, the key to balancing on a perch. If you have any trees or bushes in your garden or visit any green space at this time of year, the chances are you will encounter passerines, both perching and passing. With the more familiar garden species come a variety of scarcer birds, warblers, whitethroats, redstarts, flycatchers, and for the very lucky few, that weird and wonderful woodpecker, the wryneck. Together, they make up that plethora of little brown birds, or LBJs, little brown jobs, as they are known amongst birdwatchers, which make up much of Britain's bird population. At this time of year too, the majority of passing LBJs are particularly brown, a cohort of juveniles and females, the bright-plumaged males often having left earlier. Both the toned-down plumage and the displacement of species outside their usual habitats makes the challenge of identification that much harder, but also, at least for me, that much more exciting. That little brown bird swaying atop a tall weed in the farmer's field I would normally dismiss as just another linnet or sparrow. But take a second look, and oh, it's a whinchat, on its way south from the high moors of northern England and Scotland. If there's one thing that aids the search for LBJs, it is that they never cease moving, giving away their presence with flicks of the wing, looping fly-catching flights, or little quiet calls and clicks of the beak as they snap up the midges and gnats. Sitting out in the garden yesterday morning, a sudden movement in the blackberry stand revealed a whitethroat picking at the ripe blackberries, the first I've seen in the garden for years. Looking up at the tall birch trees, their leaves shimmering in the breeze, one hanging drape of leaves seemed to shake just that little bit more. Sure enough, in the binoculars, a bright yellow willow warbler flicked and flitted, catching flies, but all the while blending perfectly with the birch foliage, brightened to a translucent yellow in the morning sunlight. Tomorrow, they will be in someone else's garden, and before long, they will liven the coastal scrubland, ready to depart our shores. How many of these little brown jobs you will see depend entirely on how much time you can spend watching and waiting. At the first sign of disturbance, these little birds will dive for cover, but after a few moments of patience, they will re-emerge and continue feeding, rewarding you with great views. Of course, a certain lack of self-consciousness helps too, as it is not always obvious to others why you might have such an intense fascination with an apparently empty bush. Of course, the bush may prove empty, but very often, usually just as you're about to give up, a sudden flash of red sets the pulse racing. A robin-sized redstart, brown apart from a flicking rust-red tail, drops down from the bush and picks an insect off the path. So regular is this pattern of discovery in some places that local birdwatchers will often dub a particular hedge as the redstart hedge and scan particularly hard each autumn in the hope of maintaining its reputation. The real bonus of this search for our little brown jobs is that it can be undertaken almost anywhere, and your garden is one of the best places to start. Chiffchaffs, whitethroats and blackcaps are the most likely, but you never know, flycatchers, redstarts or something even rarer might just choose your patch to take a break in.
This is Peter Burley bringing you a preview of events around the district from mid-October to mid-November, so it's not quite Christmas yet. But before I start, can I just say how nice it was to meet some of you at the awards ceremony on Monday, and thank you for the kind words some of you said about my contribution. It does mean a lot to know that it is appreciated, so thank you. Now, I'm going to slip an event in just before our period starts. I just can't resist the title of it. It's the Hot Potato Syncopators, who I know I haven't previewed before because you'd remember a name like that, and they're a jazz ukulele band, and they'll be with the Ver players and other special guests, and they're going to be at Trinity Church Hall, that's in Beaconsfield Road, and they'll be there on the 12th of October at 7 p.m, that's Saturday the 12th, 7 p.m, and there will be a bar available, and tickets will be £15. Now, there's a number of things about this just to draw to your attention. I'm sure it's the first preview I've done of that particular church hall, and I think it's probably been refurbished to be an entertainment venue. Also, it's the first time I was aware that refreshments could be served there. So watch out for it. It might well be somewhere I'll be previewing again. And parking for evening events is very easy around there. Now, more serious matters, and moving on to the cathedral. We kick off on Wednesday the 16th of October at 12:30 p.m. with an organ recital by Paul Carr from Birmingham. Admission is free, but with a retiring collection. Then we have one of their big events of the year on Saturday the 19th of October, that's at 7:30 p.m, and it's the Hertfordshire Chorus performing Mendelssohn's Elijah, and they'll be supported by the London Orchestra de Camera. Tickets for that are from £16. We've got an extraordinary season on during our period called the Space Programme, and this coincides with the anniversary of the moon landing. And the one which I will preview for you is called Space Voyage, and it's an exhibition with music and talking which runs from Monday the 28th through to Friday the 1st of November. It's designed to give you a feel for actually being on the moon's surface. Tickets for that are £6 for adults, but if you turn up on the day, it'll be £7.50. Back to the music. The Brocket Consort is performing in the Cathedral on Saturday the 9th of November at 7:30 p.m. and they'll be performing for £24. That's a flat price. It's not from £24. It'll be in the Lady Chapel and there'll be music by Purcell, Finzi and poems by Thomas Hardy and Schumann. And lastly there, on Wednesday the 13th of November at 12:30 p.m, we have another organ recital, this one given by Nicholas Freestone, who's from Worcester Cathedral. Again, admission-free, but a retiring collection. Now, at St Peter's Church, we also kick off early with our concerts. These are the lunchtime concerts at 1 o'clock. First one is 16th of October, and it'll be the St Albans High School. I assume that's a choir. 23rd of October, the Beaumont School. 30th of October, the Icknield Trio. 6th of November, the Chagall Quartet, and 13th of November, the Nuska Ensemble. Now, we've got two of the Harpenden Coffee Concerts on in our period. The first is on Sunday the 20th of October at 3 in the afternoon, and it'll be given by Daniel Roskier on the clarinet and Rosanna Ralton on the harp. And the second is on Sunday the 10th of November, also at 3 p.m, and it'll be by Terence Charleston, who'll be on the organ and chamber organ. And that will be in St John's Church, and then you have coffee afterwards. Now, I think there's a entry fee, but it hasn't fetched up on my flyer. Right, we can now move to the jazz club, which has been based for the last year or so in the Maltings. So these are all in the Maltings, the next four concerts. 20th of October, Vasilis Xenopoulos, who is a tenor saxophonist. Then 27th of October, Leanne Carroll Trio, and that's voices, piano, bass and drums. 3rd of November, the Dave Newton Trio, and that's piano, bass and drums. And 10th of November, we have the O'Higgins and Luft Duo, and that's saxophone, guitar, bass and drums. As I say, they're all in the Maltings Theatre. Tickets are £13 in advance or £12 concessionary tickets. Doors open at 7 p.m. Concert starts at 7:30 and they always finish at about 10. Now, folk at the Maltings. There's one concert in our season, November the 1st, Tom Moore and Archie Morris. Now, having said that it's folk at the Maltings, they're actually having to move down the hill to the Abbey Theatre and the Studio Theatre there for that particular concert. Now, the concert will be at 8 p.m. I'm looking for ticket prices. I think you had to book that one from the actual Abbey Theatre rather than at the Maltings, and it doesn't give the price you'll be charged. Now, slightly firmer ground at the St Albans Organ Theatre. We've got two events. The first is on Saturday the 9th of November as a theatre organ concert at 7:30 p.m. given by Robert Wolfe, and he is the resident organist at the Thursford Collection in Norfolk and one of the world's leading theatre organists. Then we have, on Sunday the 10th of November, a musical afternoon featuring the collection of mechanical musical instruments. Doors open to that at 2 o'clock. Tickets are £7 for adults. And this particular musical afternoon will feature a tribute to Remembrance Day and tunes associated with the two world wars. And it will end with an audience participation of Land of Hope and Glory. Now, what I didn't say was the ticket for the concert on the 9th of November is £12.50. Carillon Chamber Choir have their second concert of the season, I now realise, and they're definitely into their stride. It's on Saturday the 9th of November, and it's not a clash. Yes, sorry, it is a clash with the Organ Theatre. I was getting my dates mixed up. You'll have to make a choice, because they're performing in St Peter's Church, Hommage à Notre Dame. There's two pieces of work by French composers on the theme of Notre Dame Cathedral. It's going to be at 7:30, Saturday the 9th, St Peter's Church, and tickets are £15. Now let's move across to the Auburn Arena. We have, first of all, the Older People's Day, which is going to be on Wednesday the 16th of October. Our second event is the biggest names in stand-up live in St Albans, and it's live at the Auburn Arena. It's just the name of the evening, and it's a number of unnamed stand-up comedians. That's on Thursday the 17th at 7:30 p.m, and all tickets are £25. On Friday the 18th of October, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £27, we have The Drifters. Not a tribute band, the real Drifters, still going strong. Then we have Ballroom Boys with Ian Waite and Vincent Simon. And this is a tribute show from Strictly Come Dancing. Well, not say tribute show. It's based on Strictly Come Dancing's music and dance display with two of the professional dancers. That's on Monday the 21st of October at 7:30 p.m. Tickets are going to range between £28 to £25, but you can buy a VIP ticket and meet them for £55. Tuesday the 22nd of October, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £23.50. We have ABBAmania, a tribute concert to the group ABBA. Then we have Lost in Music, which is a tribute to Donna Summer, Gloria Gaynor, Diana Ross, Earth, Wind and Fire, Sister Sledge, and many more. So it's a tribute. I'm not sure if they're quite Motown, but certainly American soul and rock singers. That's Friday the 25th of October, 7:30 p.m. Tickets £26.50 or £22. Then we have another tribute concert, Roy Orbison and the Travelling Wilburys Experience. And that is commemorating 30 years since the Wilburys started. And obviously, they have a Roy Orbison impersonator with them. Saturday the 26th of October, 7:30 p.m. Tickets £24.50 or £22.50. Then a very different sort of show, Monday the 28th of October, 7:30 p.m. A one-man show by Harry Redknapp, the football manager. And so if you're a football fan, this is going to be an absolute must. And of course, there will be a question and answer session, so you can ask him all the embarrassing questions you've been thinking about following his football career. It says it's a fun-packed evening. Now, tickets for that are £30, but you can buy a ticket for £80, which will include you being photographed with the star. And the VIP experience starts at 6 p.m. Now, there's another tribute concert on the 30th of October, 7:30 p.m. It's called Respect, and it's Aretha Franklin's songbook. Tickets for that are £24.50 or £23.50. Then we have Mad About the Musicals. This is claims to be the UK's number one musicals tribute show. So it's based on Broadway musical songs. Thursday the 31st of October, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £21. And we have A Beautiful Noise, and this is a tribute concert to Neil Diamond, and he'll be being played by and sung by a man called Fisher Stevens. That's on Friday the 1st of November at 7:30 p.m, tickets £29.50 or £27.50. Then we have Whitney, Queen of the Night, a tribute concert to Whitney Houston. Saturday the 2nd of November, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £25. Then we have one of the big events, which runs from the 5th to the 9th of November. It is the St Albans Musical Theatre Company, which I think used to be the St Albans Operatic Society. Anyway, it's the St Albans Musical Theatre Company presenting Lerner and Lowe's My Fair Lady. The famous musical needs no introduction, and of course, a local connection, because the original play was written by Bernard Shaw, and you can go to Shaw's Corner and see the Oscar he was awarded for the film script that he wrote from his play. So there's a very strong local connection there. So it runs from the 5th to 9th of November. Performances are 7:45 each evening, and was a Saturday matinee at 2:30 p.m. And tickets for that are £22.50, working their way down to £12. Then on the 10th of November, we have Gordon Buchanan, who is talking about wildlife. It's a one-man talk about wildlife. That's the 10th of November, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £22. On the 12th of November, 7:30 p.m, we have I Got Love For You 1980s. And this is a tribute concert to 1980s, featuring initially Wham, Madness, Bon Jovi and Madonna. Tickets for that are £25.50 down to £23.50. Ooh, there's a lot going on there, isn't there? Then we have another tribute concert, Jackson Live in Concert, it says. And this is a tribute concert to Michael Jackson and his music. That's on Wednesday the 13th of November, 7:30 p.m, all tickets £24.50. And finally, Anything for Love, another tribute concert. This is a fuel-injected magic concert featuring Meatloaf's Story. And obviously, the bill for it features Bat Out of Hell as the main thing to watch out for. Thursday, that's on Thursday the 14th of November, 7:30pm, tickets £29.50 or £27.50. Now, we'll move north to Harpenden and at the public halls. I don't know how much longer I'll be saying that, because the newspaper coverage is they're going to be demolished, and I don't know where they'll relocate the concerts to in the meantime. Sincerely hope they are relocated. Anyway, for the time being, it's still standing, and Friday the 25th of October, 7:30pm, all tickets £22, we have the ELO performing, not a tribute band, the actual ELO, and it's a seated concert. Then Saturday the 26th of October, we have China Crisis, again, the original band, not a tribute concert. China Crisis will be performing at 7:30pm, all tickets £20, and it's a seated. Then Saturday the 2nd of November, we have Tom Petty and the Heartbreakers, a tribute band to them. And it's the tribute band is actually called Petty Criminals. Now that's going to be at 7:30pm, £17.50, and it's a seated conference. And then on the 9th of November, we have UK Queen, and that's a tribute concert to Queen's music, a high-energy show, it says. That is going to be at 7:30pm, all tickets £19.50, and it's a seated conference. And the last event in Harpenden is called Lost Voice Guy. Now, it's on Wednesday the 13th of November, 7:30pm. Tickets £16 or £14 on sessionary tickets. It's seated, and it's a one-man stand-up comedy show, obviously by Lee Ridley, and he is the Lost Voice Guy. Now, let's have some drama, and I'm going to kick off at the Maltings, and they've got a play called Fugue by Stephen Thomas. And that's going to be performed from the 17th to the 19th of October. All performances at 8pm. And tickets are £13.50 down to £7.50. It's set in a newly restored house where two sisters meet after many years apart. And they've had rich life stories. And then there's another scene thousands of miles away on the shores of a frozen Canadian lake. Anyway, it's not a comedy. Now, up in Wheatamstead, the Wheatamstead Dramatic Society is performing a play called Wait Until Dark by Frederick Knott, and it's on in the Memorial Hall in Wheatamstead from the 24th to the 26th of October. And it's written by the same playwright as wrote Dial M for Murder, which is the famous Hitchcock film, but also performed here in St Albans many years ago by a repertory company. And actually, the original play, I thought, was much better than the film. It's set in 1960s London, and it features Susie as a blind housewife who becomes the target of three con men searching for drugs hidden in a doll, which her husband has unwittingly transported in his luggage. So that's it, and I haven't, unfortunately, got the full details of timing and price, but I know you get tickets from the Manor Pharmacy, and they usually, the performances start at 8 o'clock. Now let's go to the Abbey Theatre, and we have the first play in our series is called The Bosun's Mate, and it's by Ethel Smith, and it's actually, it's a concert rather than, it's a comic opera in two acts. The Bosun's Mate, Ethel Smith, performed by the St Albans Chamber Opera, and it's being performed in the Studio Theatre. And that'll run from the 24th to 25th of October at 8pm. Now, we have on the 26th of October, also in the Studio Theatre, Confusion in concert. And Confusion are a local band who performed a number of times, and proceeds of this concert will be going to local cancer research. Now, that's at 8pm, Studio Theatre, on the 26th of October. Also in the Studio Theatre, we have Folk at the Maltings Transfer. Now I've got the full details of that Folk at the Maltings concert. Starts at 8pm, tickets are £12. Now, we move to the main stage now for a play called The Pitmen Painters. It's written by Lee Hall, performed by the Company of Ten. It's going to run from the 8th to the 9th, and then the 12th to the 16th of November at 8pm all those evenings, and a Sunday matinee on the 10th of November at 2:30pm. On the 7th of November, it will be a benefit performance for St Albans Citizens Advice. Now, what actually happens in it is, when a group of coal miners begin evening classes with a college professor, they want to learn about art, what's good, what's bad, and what it means. But soon the men discover there's more to the art world than they first thought. And when they start painting for themselves, the art world discovers there's more to this group of miners than they expected too. Now, we're moving back to the Sandpit Theatre at Sandringham School, because on Monday the 28th of October, there's a performance of a play called Claire Hollingworth and the Scoop of the Century. And this is a play about journalism. A young intrepid journalist crossed over the border from Poland to Germany, and there she saw things that would change her life and history forever. And this is, I think, based on a real story of an extraordinary woman journalist who managed to inveigle her way into all the great hot spots in the 20th century and bring back extraordinary reports. So that will be on Monday the 28th at 11:30 a.m. in the morning at 2:30 p.m. in the afternoon, and tickets will be £8 or £6. And back at the Maltings Theatre, running from the 29th of October to the 9th of November, 8 p.m. all performances, except for the 3rd, 4th, 5th and 6th of November, when there aren't performances, we have As You Like It by William Shakespeare. I don't think you need much plot summary from me on that. It's being performed in the Maltings. Yep. And I think it's by, it's OVO's award-winning company. Tickets are £13.50 down to £7.50. Now, up in Harpenden, the High Street Players are performing in the High Street, as you would expect. They're performing in St Nicholas Church Hall, which is off Church Green in Harpenden, and they're presenting a play called The Birth of Gossip. And they're performing that on November the 1st and November the 2nd, 8 p.m. both evenings. Tickets are £10. They're available from a church office or from the Manor Pharmacy, and the play is about a witchcraft trial in the 16th century, and it features the accusation that a midwife called Marjorie has been practicing witchcraft. Now, the St Albans and Hertfordshire Architectural and Archaeological Society have talks on the 15th of October. This will be on the Peterloo Massacre of 1819 and its significance. And that's by Dr. Katrina Navikas. And that's going to be at 7:45 in the Marlborough Road Methodist Church. Then on the 22nd of October, we have a talk on the decline of the many inns of St Albans. That's been given by the Society's own John Mean. Then on the 2nd of November, we have Disraeli and the Historians. That's given by Ian St John. And finally, on the 5th of November, the history of the gardens and grounds at Wimpole Hall. And that's been given by Alison Moller. Now, also at the museum, there's an amazing season where they're bringing a planetarium in, but there's various shows and lectures associated with it. And it's going to be on the 30th and 31st of October, with various show times through the day, and admission will be £3 or £5. Now, some outdoor events to round us off. We've got Aylett's Apple Festival, and that's on the 19th to 20th of October, and that's at Aylett's Nursery. Then we have a Continental Circus from Berlin, and they'll be performing on the 30th of October and the 31st on Harpenden Common. Now, performances will be at 3 in the afternoon on the 30th and 7:45 in the evening on the 31st, and ticket prices, extraordinary range here, range from £9 up to £33. And lastly, we have to go out on a bang, given the fact that November the 5th falls in our period. But there are actually no displays on November the 5th itself, but I've got two for you on November the 2nd. And the first one is over in Redbourne. It'll be on Redbourne Common. The second one is a rather larger one, I suspect, which is the Cathedral Firework Display, which is a big charity-raising event in Verulamium Park. And the gates open at 6 p.m. The fireworks start being let off at 7:30 p.m.